The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, Crit Nation, I just wanted to take a moment to let you know that our Unearthed Tips and Tricks Volume 2 is now available on DM's Guild. You can head on over to critacademy.com and find the link directly to it. Please, like always, if you want to support our show, pick it up, leave a review, and tell a friend. And now, on with the show. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your guest, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host. Hold on. I'm not a guest.
You're not a guest anymore, bro, but it's okay. You can call yourself whatever you want. I'll allow it.
We're kind of past that point.
Yeah.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Our show may not be suitable for young children, but neither is our D&D games.
That is certainly true.
Although I think last time not much crazy happened in Avernus. So I think we were kind of okay
that time. We kept it pretty chill.
Yeah. I think last time it was pretty PG-13.
Accidents happen. Oh, man, that's funny. I am really excited for today's episode, you guys. We don't generally cover our own content, so talking about weapon perks is really tickling my dice today. Not only that, our DM tip today is awesome. I absolutely love this. I got to play in a game that utilized this technique, and I will be utilizing it in our Descent into Avernus game soon. So I'm really excited to talk about that. But before all that, I just want to say, if you enjoy our show and you'd want to support us, please visit CritAcademy.com, check out our Patreon page, maybe pick up some of our best-selling D&D supplements, all that stuff, or just subscribe to our newsletter to be entered to win fat loots each and every single week. Keep a lookout, because I'm maybe looking to change that up once again, so we'll see. For our Let's Talk About Blank segment, I've got a really interesting topic. Do you guys know Joe
Manganiello? Yes.
Manganiello?
Yeah, whatever. Do you guys know Joe?
Yep, we know Joe.
I'm really excited. I just found this article from Omaze where you can actually enter to join an adventure with him, and that's exciting.
Huh.
Manganiello is how old Handy says it said. Manganiello is what I thought it was. But anyways, this is really awesome. He is one of the big-time superstars that really pushes D&D and isn't afraid to admit that he's a big, huge nerd, which I think is just fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I still laugh at a tweet where a pro wrestler posted, like, I don't play anything near like D&D. They posted a picture of him shirtless. Hooked up. Only for the contract.
I do.
Also just beefed out.
I do. I love that. That was really funny when that came out. That guy's like, I don't play D&D. Yeah, so you probably got a small wiener too.
All the steroids that professional
right. You guys got a chance to read through this. This is really cool because you get to bond with Joe, you get to play a thrilling game with him, you get to fly out and see him, and you get to walk through the Wizards of the Coast Central, man, the headquarters.
That'd be so cool, actually.
That sounds so awesome.
Yeah. Could you, Matt, I wonder if you could get like a little like run through of all the stuff they get to, that they're currently working on.
Yeah, I don't know.
Love you to see.
It would be really interesting. It's definitely something cool. But what's really cool is what he's doing for this prize, this this competition, this raffle, whatever you want to call it, is he has partnered up with Make-A-Wish Foundation. And that's so, really awesome. Yeah, all you have to do is donate money to help save children. I mean, that is an amazing way to for him to leverage his love of the game. At least that's what I think. What do you guys think?
Hey, I'd have to jump in $20 for a chance for all that and giving to a good cause.
Yep.
Yeah, right? That'd be awesome.
I'm going to go ahead and share the links in our chat right now so you can find the link directly. If you miss it, just head on over to critacademy.com and click on the blog for this episode with the show notes and everything, and you'll get the link there. It is really just a really cool thing that he's doing, and he's using his nerddom to help the children that are suffering from, you know, these multitude of problems. And
for sure, I mean,
it's just it to me, it was awesome, and it blew my heart away. You know, tens of thousands of volunteers, donors, and supporters help make a wish possible. You know, they use their clout to grant a wish to every eligible child diagnosed with a critical condition.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know, you know, on average, a wish is granted about every 16 minutes around the world. Did you know that?
That's crazy. That's a lot.
But, and I think this is part of the reason he's doing it, due to the public and medical concerns of COVID-19, the Make-A-Wish faces a record number of wishes granting this year.
Yeah.
So they are celebrating their 40th anniversary of the wish that inspired the founding of the organization in 1980. Now more than ever, Make-A-Wish needs the support of individuals like us to continue to grant wishes to every eligible child. So I cannot tell you enough, please, if you can afford it, and I know money's tight for some people,
yeah,
consider supporting this charity. You might get to go play D&D with a legend, but more importantly, you're going to help make somebody's wish come true, and it's not an 8th level spell. So,
isn't wish a 9th level?
I don't have... Dude, yeah. Sorry.
Look, I'm sorry. This ninth is a level. D&D show, and I have to think about these things.
Yes, yes, I got.
Look at nature now.
I was in the zone.
I was like, wait,
just to get your data straight, douche.
The immersion just immediately got sliced in half. I'm like,
oh, you cracked me up. Funny. Do you guys have any comments on this for our Let's Talk About Blank segment? Any thoughts?
No, you pretty much said it all, honestly. I mean, not only do you get you pretty much just said it, like, not only do you get a chance to play with a legend, you're also helping out children who really need this around the world. So you definitely hear all those stories about Make-A-Wish Foundation. I think John Cena is a big one you always see nonstop. So it's always there. We always see it. So we can actually still keep contributing, especially in a time of need. So I can agree with it.
Well said. Ian, you got anything?
Nothing that we haven't already said.
All right.
Sounds good.
Just to give everyone a timeline, it is May 10th, and you have 51 days left to be entered in this. Like I said,
quite a while, actually.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. So if we get out of this rut and you can't afford it right now, maybe a little bit later, you can head on over to critacademy.com and just look for the weapon perks show notes, and you'll find it.
There you go.
All right. I think that'll do it for our Let's Talk About Blank segment. Joe, thank you so much for being fucking awesome.
For being a bro.
Right?
For being a D&D brother.
Crit Nation, thank you for joining us today here at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your rolls don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Your rolls are like a weapon without a perk.
Yeah, I know that's supposed to go before Let's Talk About Blank, but I was really excited.
You're like, it's Joe! Joe Magnanimino!
You know what's worse is I watched that video like 5 times and he says his name in it right in the beginning. But I'm just not good at reading. So before we move on to our main topic, Austin, would you like to talk about our giveaway?
Absolutely. Today's giveaway today is by Loresmith. It's the Modular Dungeon Tiles, the Arcania set. If you haven't seen it for the last like 70th time, well, you're about to hear it again. So, can you move your mouse just a little bit? Yeah, it's right on top of the thing.
Sorry.
You'd think I'd memorize it by now. But, right? The Modular Dungeon Tiles are an easy way to create your own beautiful digital maps. So the Arcania set in particular lets you make these like dark, shadowy dungeons rich with the fumes of arcane secrets. So I always say it every time, you might find a Vorpal Sword, or this time you might find a Lich. I don't know. It's up to your DM. Maybe you might find Silverlight or some branding sword. I don't know. Flamebird.
Sounds good.
Great.
Ian, who's our winner today?
Our winner today is, ironic, it's on your conversation before the show, Lord Maul Returns.
We were actually talking about Star Wars just before the show went live, yeah. And Darth Maul was the topic of choice.
One of them.
Very funny.
So congratulations, Low Maul Returns. If you enjoy the adventure, please let Laura Smith know. Leave him, or not the adventure. If you enjoy the product, let Laura Smith know. Leave him a review, all that jazz. Austin, what do they do if they didn't win?
Well, don't worry about it, because if you didn't win, you can just head over to critacademy.com/loresmith and you can get a free set of digital terrain and so much more. So just head over there.
Yeah.
You get more stuff anyway. So just do it. It's not hard. It's quite literally hyperlinked. You could just click it.
All right. Let's move on to our main topic, shall we?
Yeah. Weapon perks.
We are going to be talking weapon perks. Ian, what are weapon perks?
Why, there are stuff that you can slip on your weapons for both PCs and NPCs to make your weapons not only have more variety, but make them way more dangerous.
Yes.
We like danger.
If you don't know, in the world of D&D, weapons are more than just objects that adventurers carry to stab, slice, and or break enemies with. You know, in the proper hands of a master, a weapon is more than a powerful weapon. It's a powerful tool used to gain the upper hand against an enemy. A weapon perk is a special skill or technique that can be used with a specific weapon. This allows each weapon to feel unique among all the options that the players have, and hopefully give them kind of their own feel and their own identity. Mm-hmm. One thing that I think we can all agree on is that in most cases, weapon choice comes down to the size of the die. Would you agree?
100%. I can't think of anything else of why I would choose, like, unless it's like I'm going for like polearm master, maybe if I'm investing for it, but just give me a great sword. Honestly, just give me a great sword. It's so much better.
And that happens a lot, to be honest. While there are a few feats, there's great weapon master, there's polearm, there's a few feats, crossbow expert, that really gauge towards certain weapons. But outside of those feats, the weapons are generally indistinguishable. A great example would be a polearm and a glaive, or and a halberd, and
a great axe.
Yeah, I mean, those pretty much, for the most part, like all the reach weapons are pretty much the same. Sure, the damage type might be different, but
like piercing and slashing.
Yeah, that doesn't come into play nearly as often as you would think, right? So what I decided to do, I took an inspiration from the Kobold Press weapon options. I don't know if you guys remember us covering that. And I really, really like that idea. So I went through every single weapon in the player's handbook and decided to add flavor and a bit of lore on top of some mechanics for it. Now, these guys, both Ian and Austin, weren't involved in this, so I'm excited to see what they have to say about it from a non-biased perspective that I have, because I wrote it. That being said, we're going to go through this. We're going to talk about some of the weapons. We'll talk about the art and the layout and all that jazz, and kind of get an overall feel for this product. I do want to mention that it already hit bestseller status, copper bestseller, so thank you to everybody that already picked it up. You guys are awesome. please, please leave a review, because I don't think there's a review yet. I don't think we've ever got this far without a review.
It's kind of a weird anomaly.
I know, right? So starting off, just give me an overall view. What do you guys think like about the layout?
Layout's great.
It's simple, even like for you. Usually you're pretty, usually things are kind of colorful, but I mean, there's like, don't get me wrong, there is stuff there, like right under where the mace and quarterstaff is. So like design wise, I think it's simple, but it works. Cause I mean, it's just weapon perks. So you have a bunch of weapons around and it's cool.
My inspiration like mostly was some of the old school black and white art.
Go ahead. I was going to say, it kind of reminds me almost like a weapon manual. And I kind of like that.
I hadn't considered that. That's actually pretty cool. I like that.
Like, it's almost like, this is how you use a rapier. Like, this is the lore about it, and this is how you use it. And then, of course, there's the actual mechanic. Like, this is what it does. Do this.
Right.
But I do kind of enjoy that a lot.
You are right. It is very tame compared to some of the other stuff that I've done.
It is. Aside from the cover, obviously. And it's not, it's not a bad thing. It's right. Just an observation. Because I've seen a lot of your work, obviously. I work with you. but for instance, like the Void Walker, lots of like dark colors, a lot of purple, some orange in there as well to contrast. And then this one is a little more black and white. You know?
I love it.
It's not a bad thing. Again,
I know all the old stuff was black and white, and that's why I thought it would be different. So, Ian, what do you think?
I mean, our style's great, and all the info here is excellent. So,
yeah,
straight to the point. I like it. All right, now on to the good stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the weapon perks themselves. So, the way this was designed is that anybody that is proficient with a weapon has access to each weapon's perk. What does that mean? Players that are like wizards and stuff that only have access to simple weapons, sure, they can wield the other stuff, but they're not going to be able to pull off some of the more fancier things, while somebody like a fighter who has access to all the weapons can basically use all of them at their disposal, and it only requires proficiency. I didn't put any like requirements on strengths or anything like that because I wanted it to be simple, and since the proficiency mechanic was already built, it just made sense to go off of that.
And I can agree with that, too. It's just simple and easier to get through. I do like how you can use strength or dex for either one of these for the most part, I think. Or is it just all of them?
Well, yeah. So I assume you're talking about the saving throws?
Oh, yes. The break requires a saving throw. Yeah, strength or dex is your choice. So I do like that.
Just like spells, if you use, if any of the effects have saving throws, you'll have 8 plus your proficiency bonus. Plus your strength or your dex, up to your choice. So that works. That means the same weapon will do the same thing regardless if a barbarian is swinging it or a rogue is, you know, using it. So,
I do enjoy that.
To get the ball rolling, Ian, do you want to tell us about a weapon that really jumped out at you that you really thought looked cool and had a great mechanic?
Good luck picking just one. I'm going to go with the rapier to start.
Okay. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the lore that's there and about the mechanic tied to it?
All right. The lore is the rapier is an interesting weapon. Its blade, long and unusually thin compared to other blades, it makes a prime weapon for thrusting maneuvers. They have very intricate hilt and handguards. The rapier is found less in the hands of the military or a militiaman and more in the hands of a noble. The nobles often challenge each other to duels and competitions of skill and dexterity with these blades. These weapons work best in the hands of a wielder, who believe a single, precise strike to a vital area is all that should be needed to take out a foe.
See, now that to me is, that really grasps the idea behind what the rapier is supposed to be, in my opinion, right? So,
And I think in most European history, rapiers weren't really seen too much as... Again, like from military standpoints, they were definitely more towards more civil weapons.
Right.
They meant more for duels, usually.
Yeah.
Yep. Although both the Musketeers had them, too.
Yes, I love the Musketeers, man. So what kind of power, what are the abilities that come with this bad boy?
This one has 2. Not all of them do, for the record, but this one has 2. The first one being precision thrust, where as a bonus action, you may make a wisdom perception check contested by the target's insight. If you win, the contest You spot a weak point of the opponent's defense and can use your action to make a single melee weapon attack against it. This hits with a pinpoint accuracy, treating the target's AC as 10 plus its dex mod.
Wow, that's really good, actually.
Yep.
But again, it doesn't sound broken because it's still a contested check, and you can only make one attack with it.
And it consumes your bonus action, so even if you fail, like a rogue has to make that decision, because a rogue's probably, let's say the rogue is most likely going to probably use a rapier for damage output, right? So
I could agree with that.
When they're in a situation where they can choose to, they're struggling to hit an enemy with high AC, this can all has a chance to kind of offset that, but they have to give up their cunning action, basically, which is dodging, hiding, dashing, all that stuff.
For the rogues, yeah.
Yeah, for the rogue specifically.
And its other ability is the riposte. When a creature misses you with a melee attack, you can use your reaction to make a melee attack against the creature.
Very good. I like that a lot.
Once again, leading into a duelist flavor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that really was the focus of it. Because one thing, I don't know if you've noticed, there are a lot of spells that use reactions, but very few combat mechanics, like melee mechanics, that use the reaction.
Unless you usually take like a feat for it, maybe. Usually you don't get too much, yeah.
Yeah, and then, so this was something that really fit the flavor, fit the theme. This one definitely is a more interesting because it has two, and the fact that it encourages the use of the reaction, which is great for rogues because then they get another chance to get their sneak attack, right?
Exactly.
But in order to do that, they got to not be hiding. So once again, they kind of got to pick and choose.
I like that one a lot. Yep. That was a good one.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Austin, which weapon do you really like?
So mine only has one, which is fine, but mine is the sickle. So I'll read the flavor text real quick. The sickle is a single-handed architectural tool used by many farmers. Their unique conclave hooked blade design was made for harvesting the grain crops or dense foliage to be used for livestock feed. These tools are a weapon of choice for farmers as it is far more deadly than a traditional quarterstaff. Its hook design grants its offensive and defensive capabilities, allowing a skillful wielder to defend and attack simultaneously. And usually when I think of sickles as well, I'm sure a lot of people probably do, but they usually think of like ninjas or, you know, that kind of style of weapon usage.
I always think Grim Reaper, honestly.
Or Grim Reaper, you can think of like the longer like scythes, maybe. Yep. Yeah. I like the design of the sickle, and in this game it doesn't really do anything.
Have you ever seen anybody use one?
Well, in this game I haven't. And I can't imagine why anyone would, because I think it's still like a D4.
It's a D4, yeah.
Yeah, so it's still as good as a dagger, but you can't even throw it.
Right.
So let's put it in that in perspective real quick.
Right.
I love this because it's a cutting parry. And mind you, I think sickles are considered simple weapons, so this is nice. When a creature attacks you with a weapon, you may use your reaction to catch their weapon in the hook of your sickle, parrying their attack while the hook sinks into them. Make an attack roll with your sickle. If the result of this roll equals or exceeds their attack roll, their attack misses and you roll your normal weapon damage. Mind you, this is when they attack you. So you get a chance to not only take away their weapon attack, with a contested check, of course, but you also get to have a chance to make an attack of your own at that point at the same time. It's very cool. I can imagine it super cool. Like some guys trying to stab you with a short sword and you kind of just grind the sickle all the way up to the hill and you kind of just wave it around their wrist like that. And it's
cut
just,
it up a little bit.
Ooh, that'd be cool. But that's why I'm like, man, that'd be awesome. I would love to use a sickle over a dagger in that case. I'd be like, yeah, give me a sickle, dude.
And that was, well, before I give my opinion, my thoughts on why I designed it that way, Ian, what do you think?
As we pointed out before, the sickle is usually a low damage item. So let's face it, as a result, a lot of players aren't going to touch it. But this does seem to add an incentive for carrying one around, especially if you have a build in mind to utilize it.
Yeah, I think this would really work well for a character who takes like a lot of the dodge action a lot and uses it as a counter weapon.
Or could they even see like a battle master fighter adding this to his arsenal too, for that matter?
That's a good point. Like I would 100% take a sickle now. Like that would be so fun. I would Like, I wouldn't even, like, I would debate not taking this, or I would debate taking this over, like, a longsword or something, just because of how, like, the reward isn't even that super hard to get, I guess, but the reward is just so cool and cinematically, like, I can just picture it in my head and I'd be like, man, that'd be awesome. It'd be so cool to do, but I would love to do that. Oh, dude. Could you imagine if he came in with like a halberd and I like swirled it around real quick and I yanked the halberd towards me and I grabbed the thing and I hit him in the like in the stomach with it? It'd be so cool. Oh man,
that does sound pretty freaking right? Awesome, man.
Like you yank the halberd because you know how they usually have like open hooks or something. You can just like pierce it right in there and pull it over, and so you yank the whole person over and you stab him right in the chest or something. Man, it'd be awesome.
That's awesome. You're tickling my dice a little bit there, buddy.
That's why I was like, this is so cool. Like, it's just a simple little sickle, and you could just do so much with it because of the whole hook design. But anyway, whoever has the next one go, because I could talk about this for a while.
Well, and that's awesome. That's kind of what I want to hear. So, once again, as you'll notice, he picked the sickle, and I'm actually going to pick another weapon that I don't see get used that often, specifically because... I think that some of these weapon perks can encourage you to use these lesser used weapons over the mm-hmm. higher damage ones. So I actually want to talk a little bit about the war pick. It has if you don't know, the war pick started off as a tool used by miners to, you know, cut precious gems from rocks. And due to the precious nature of the cargo that miners carried, they often found themselves, you know, under attack by monsters and get rich quick bandits. Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, at that point they're forced to defend themselves with, you know, the only real weapons that they had, which was kind of their mining picks, right? I'm envisioning the seven dwarves protecting Snow White with these things.
Yeah.
Now it hasn't, it wasn't long before the adventurers and soldiers realized that the armor piercing power of the tools, designed to cut into rocks. So, because of this, this has an ability called Armor Piercer. When you miss with a melee weapon attack, if the creature is wearing heavy armor, roll a d4 and add it to your attack value. Now, if the creature's got some sort of heavy armor, this is great because it's significant. An extra d4 to attack roll is a huge bonus.
Absolutely.
But it has a specific requirement, in this case, yeah. Heavy armor. What do you guys think about that?
It really does make sense too, right? Because like you, it like picks are like it's almost kind of like the idea of like the dagger, where it's just kind of like this thing where it kind of is meant to like really get in because it's all about this like really thin point all the way through, right? It's supposed to mm-hmm. dive in really hard into something. Well, with a war pick, that's the whole fucking thing, and you're wielding this thing with two hands and driving it into something, right? That thing's gonna go through something. And
it's one job.
Yeah, it's one job is to go through like steel ore. It'll go through a steel plate. Like, I think that's cool.
So Carpageddon is asking if you could apply this perk to Earth Elementals.
Good question.
To me, any creature with a really exceptionally high DC or hard surface, I totally would allow this. Whether it's an earth elemental,
like natural armor.
Yeah, some sort of natural armor. It doesn't specifically say that, but just like any other rules, the DM does have a leeway to make that adjustment, especially considering the point of the weapon.
Right? And I can
the point,
the
get it?
For, right?
The point.
I can agree with that, right? Because I mean, if I argued that to my DM, like, yeah, I mean, if he's an earth elemental, like. This thing's meant to go through rock. Can I use my extra D4 in case I miss? I'd be like, yeah, I mean, why not? It makes sense to me. I mean, he's a rock. You're using a pick. That's kind of his job.
And so that's one of those things that, once again, really is specific use. And you're going to actually start to see that with some of the more powerful weapons. There's conditions to making a trigger, which makes them less likely to happen all the time. Depending on how potent they are. And there's a reason for that balance, right? The longsword can't do more damage and have an effect that they can trigger indefinitely, right? Which brings me, Ian, do you want to pick out another weapon to talk about?
I am going to pick the net.
The net.
I'm very surprised, actually. Hold on, I didn't read this one.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the flavor and the ability there, Ian?
All right, flavor-wise, what once started off as a simple fisherman's tool, nets can be used by in a variety of situations. Trappers may conceal a net under foliage, waiting for a game to trip a trigger. Pit fighters and gladiators use nets to entrap a beast or man. Even spiders weave nets of their own to catch prey. A simple tool for this for simple prey or the simply unlucky.
True.
Have you guys ever seen anybody use a net in play?
Nope. Only you as the DM. That was the only time.
That's true.
Yep.
Never seen a player use it.
And that was on a nautical themed adventure, so.
Yep. Yeah.
What does it do?
Safety net. While you're wielding a net, other creatures provoke an opportunity attack from you when they enter your reach. This attack must be made with the net.
This is awesome.
I love it. Oh, man. That's silly, almost, but I love it.
Well, Ian, not Ian, the net is a very interesting weapon by the fact that if it hits you, it basically costs you a turn.
Mm-hmm.
Either trying to get out of it or stops you in your tracks so you can't hit somebody. Ian, why don't you tell us more about why you picked this specifically?
Well, as you said, not very many people use nets as it is, and this adds more incentive to use it. Getting one more attack in is always helpful.
Yep. And if you don't know, I mean, the net can easily be destroyed, so that's unfortunate. But yep. If it costs you one net to stop the big giant monster from cutting your face in, especially mm-hmm. as like a weaker, less armored class, like maybe a rogue or a bard or something like that, that can make the difference between you dying and surviving, or throwing it on somebody when you're standing right next to them. If the wizard's next to me and they run into our range and I cast it on, cast my nets. Anyway, you cast the net, it might save that person. So which is why I think is aptly named the safety net.
Yeah,
because it's probably not going to last very long, but loss of a single action is huge, and they might not even get out, right? I mean, we assume they roll high and are going to get out, because I think the DC to get out is like 10.
Yeah, it's not usually very high.
But there's always a chance that they won't, making this a pretty interesting perk, I think.
Probably the most unique one on this list.
Oh, for sure. I had a lot of fun coming up with that. I was like, how can I make this interesting?
So my next one is it's optional. It is written in here as optional. It is the unarmed strike. So sometimes when you're a monk, you're like, why would I ever want to just punch somebody when I can just wield like a quarterstaff and deal more damage? Well, this is why. Because you've all seen it. I guarantee it. You've all seen the movies where, you know, the guy comes in straight down with like a katana and the guy goes and he stops it. And you're like, he did the thing.
He did the thing.
He caught the blade. Oh, my God. Oh, that's not possible. And, well, I don't actually believe it is possible. I'm pretty sure it'll just cut right through your hand like that. But this is D&D. Who cares?
I think motherfuckers did bust it for the most part. So,
yeah. I mean, maybe if you were like wearing like gauntlets or something, it'll definitely like you can probably literally catch it out of the air like that. But so when a creature attack, well, I'll read the thing first. The unarmed strike is by far the most common form of weapon. Anyone can throw a punch, but this doesn't mean they are a master of unarmed strikes. Some believe that the origin of martial arts and unarmed combat started in the East during a time of high slavery. The slaves themselves were not allowed to use their own weapons, so in order to defend themselves from those who wielded swords and other blades, they spent a little spare time they had learning techniques to avoid the weapon altogether. Some say the first slaves who developed these unarmed techniques moved to the solitude of a mountain where they built a monastery. This tradition has since continued, even though some of the techniques have been altered and improved upon. So the cool thing you get from this isn't any crazy extra damage, or, you know, you don't get to roundhouse kick a guy in the chin. But what you can do is you can blade catch, which is way cooler. When a creature attacks you with a melee weapon, you may use your reaction to attempt to catch or parry their attack with your bare hands. Make an attack roll with your unarmed strike. If the result equals or exceeds their attack roll, the attack misses. So could you imagine if I'm like, because I'm we're in Descent and Avernus, if I'm like looking at Zariel right now and I'm just like, bitch, and I just fucking pop her sword out of the air, and she just looks at me like, I'm sorry. You're not a monk. I'm like, and you're not an angel.
That's hilarious.
That'd be, what a legendary moment that would be. I think that could just create some real, real fun, just roleplay opportunities even, right? Like,
right.
You always want to be that badass who, like, some guy, like, throws a sword at you and you just, like, push the sword out of the way like that, and you're just, like, weak. Oh, man.
So, yeah, that was a fun one. I did include that as optional because that is pretty powerful in the hands of a monk.
Yeah.
And honestly, the monk's probably the only one that can benefit from that without a feat.
Yeah.
Which is why I specifically left it as optional, because they have access to a bunch of other stuff already as far as abilities to help mitigate damage. But that always seemed like something that could be a lot of fun if your monk could do it. Like, you always think about it, but you know.
Right. I think it would really work because I know, and this is Unearthed Arcana, I know, but the fighting style for like the fighter, they get unarmed, right? So they can throw a punch and then grapple during that punch, and they can deal more an extra d4 damage while they're grappling somebody. And their fists do 1d6, and they can use theirs, and it's just their strength modifier. So it's really cool. I think this would be awesome to do like some unarmed fighter build with this unarmed strike like weapon perk. So you like you just see this guy and he just like brushes off a blade with his like, you know, his like arm guards, and you're just like, man, that is so cool.
I guess fist indeed.
Yeah. So
that would be cool.
Yeah, that was definitely one that does have a little bit more power, which is why I specifically said it was optional. Now, we haven't talked about any of the big weapons yet. Before we get into like the honorable mentions and everything, I wanted to pick at least one big weapon to talk about, and it's a pretty good one. The one thing that you can't really do is, aside from damage, you don't feel the impact of some of the weapons. Anybody that's listened to our show knows that I love the Maw and that I've reflavored it as all kinds of things. Specifically, the mailbox is my favorite, but
yeah, it's a Maw.
yeah, that's what I use it for. And so I want to talk a little bit about the Maw. If you don't know, the Maw is an interesting weapon as it started off as a tool to break apart stone blocks and by blacksmith in the forging of really heavy weapons. Many kingdoms grant these long-handled heavy hammers to prisoners and some, you know, slaves to help with rock breaking and demolition of old or destroyed buildings and, you know, keeps and what have you. Due to their heavy weight, though, few prefer this weapon, for obvious reasons, but it can pack a punch that will knock a demon back to the nine hells. Now, one thing that always bugged me is that you don't feel the jarring impact of a Maw.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now we can, with the stunning blow. You can use your action to make a special melee attack. On a hit, you can forego normal weapon damage. If you do, the creature takes damage equal to your strength modifier and must succeed a constitution saving throw or be stunned until the start of your next turn. Once you use this feature a number of times equal to your strength modifier, you can't use this feature again till you finish a short or long rest.
That's badass.
It is.
Robert Baratheon on your enemies.
Yeah. And really, this was inspired by one of the monk abilities, to be honest. Stunning Strike?
Yeah.
It was inspired by that. I was like, why can a monk hit so hard to stun somebody, but a damn Maw can't?
Yeah,
it's basically a rock on the end of a stick. A big rock. So I took some of that with, obviously, some other mechanical limitations. The one being, you have to forego your attack. So if you've got multi-attack, you're going to lose it. So there's definitely a trade-off there. But if you can... and they have to fail the saving throw, which... if you've got full strength, you know, plus your proficiency, it's very likely they will. But the debuff of being stunned, your allies can take such advantage of that, that it is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And
that really does drive home the whole, like you're just, imagine this really big pissed off brute who's like, man, I'm fucking tired of this guy. And he just takes both hands and he's just wailing it down on the guy. You know?
Yeah. Carmageddon says, we've just entered Monster Hunter territory. Yes, yes, okay, we have. I'm not going to lie. When I was playing Monster Hunter World, a lot of these, that's actually kind of part of where this all spawned. We did the player options. I played Monster Hunter World. I was like, I can do something with this. Mm. And so, you know, I did. Now, as I do want to remind everyone, the exact, debuff that stun is, because it's pretty bad. The creature is incapacitated, can't move, and can speak only faltering. The creature automatically fails strength and dex saves, and attack rolls have advantage.
That's bad. Imagine a champion fighter wailing on him?
Yeah.
Guy's dead.
And so, it's definitely powerful. You would say it's even a stone cold stunner. but it does have its limits, and there are trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
So,
very cool though. I like it a lot.
I'd say let's go ahead and pick one more. Is there a honorable mention you think we have to talk about?
Daggers.
Let's talk about daggers.
I agree with dagger. Yeah.
Do you want to take it?
You want to take it again? Or
a dagger is a knife with a very sharp point and usually two sharp edges, typically designed or capable of being used as a thrusting weapon. This has made them potent weapons for penetrating small gaps in armor. Daggers have been used throughout history for close combat confrontations for this reason, and a favorite among assassins. Each culture has used adorned daggers in magical and non-magical rituals and ceremonial contexts. The distinctive shape and historical usage has made it an iconic and symbolic weapon.
Yep.
It's true.
Austin, what is its feature?
It's very cool, especially if you're a rogue. So imagine you're walking into a party, right? You know, guys checking for weapons. Well, luckily for you, your DM allowed weapon perks and you're wielding a dagger. So this has the ability that is called Hidden Weapon. As a bonus action, you may make a dexterity sleight of hand check to conceal up to two daggers on a success. As an action, you can make a single weapon attack with a hidden dagger against a creature that hasn't taken a turn in combat yet. Your attack can score a critical hit on a roll of 19 or 20. So, it's really good. I mean, you can imagine just like a rogue just strolling up. It's like, oh yeah, go ahead and pat me down. There's nothing here. My knife is in my sleeve. and, you know, you get on through and like your target's just right in front of you. You can just go, and that guy's probably going to go down. Because you're a rogue with sneak attack that can crit on a 19 or 20.
This was something that I struggled to design because I wanted, because most of the time there are better weapons for a rogue to pick than a dagger.
Yep.
By a mile.
Rapier does twice the damage.
Yes. So by utilizing the bonus action as a way to attempt to hide it and increase your crit range a little bit. Once again, for a rogue. The reason I keep using rogue is because they're the one most likely to try to use this to get the most benefit out of it. But they're not limited to that, right? Anybody can try this sleight of hand check, right? A mistress who's going to poison somebody and gets caught in the act. Maybe she tries to, you know, hide this dagger so she can, you know, get a crit. Or a fighter, maybe. But
I was going to say a fighter could do it, too. Yeah.
Pretty much anybody can do it as long as they're proficient, and that's kind of the point. But they're meant to be easy to conceal. So I wanted it something that couldn't be easily taken from a player. So your ability to conceal it, it doesn't talk about how you conceal it. Doesn't matter. That's up to the DM or you to figure out. Whether you're concealing it between your breasts or your ass cheeks, as long as you're hidden for a strip search, you still hide.
You got your prison pocket always ready. It's always there for you.
I've never heard of that. Oh my god, prison pocket. That's hilarious. So this is designed to give this weapon a little bit of an edge over the higher damage dealing weapons, and that is increasing your chance to do extra damage. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was an amazing addition. It also gives you a reason to want to dual wield with daggers, right?
Yep.
Because mostly people will take just the rapier and hope for the initial big damage and hope for sneak attack. But you don't ever want to give up your bonus action because you might be able to dash, disengage, all that stuff.
Well, no, they can dodge. Yeah.
With this one, this consumes your bonus action, but you can hide up to two weapons. And if you hide those successfully, the next two attacks that you're dual wielding, boom, boom, have a chance to increase chance of crit. Carmageddon says it's canon now. Perk is now dubbed prison pocket. Oh shit, that's funny. So,
or because like it would also be really cool too. Because well, I guess if you rogues don't usually have two attacks, huh? But
well, they
you can stab one guy, and then you can take the other dagger and you can just throw it at the guy down the hall, because it's still technically it was concealed and you can still get the crit of 19 or 20 on a thrown dagger.
It does. It is. That was definitely part of the thought process, that it does work on ranged attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you can attack with two weapons. It would just be on the next turn because you would consume your bonus action this turn, and it takes a bonus and standard to attack with two if you don't have extra attack. Anyways, that was actually a really good choice, you guys. Thanks for bringing that up.
Agreed.
Overall, what do you guys think about this as far as, like, balance? Did you see anything that really stood out as blatantly overpowered? Anything you thought was a very interesting or poor design mechanic?
Honestly, I felt like it was all pretty well designed. Like, it's pretty well thought out. I mean, I even looked at, like, I was like, oh, there's the one that's the shield down here. I was like, I wonder what this does. But honestly, it's just like they miss an attack, you just poof, right in the chest with your shield. I'm like, yeah, man, it kind of makes sense.
Yep. I think there's a feat that does that too.
Like, I do like the, like, all the lore things that you kind of like derived them from. And it does kind of like go into like you the skill, at least as far as I've read so far. So I'm about it. I would love to use these in any like D&D campaign, because then I have reasons to use other weapons besides like, ah, yes, I am longsword paladin. I am sword and board. Who would have guessed?
I would have included this in your thing, but I had already given you guys
talents already.
And stuff. I'm like, I'm not adding to it.
Yeah.
But that is something that is on the
next campaign.
On the docket for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to give an honorable mention just because you brought up the throwing. The dart actually has an ability that lets you throw three darts in a turn without extra attack. Because normally you can throw one with your action, one with your bonus. But the dart actually has the barrage that lets you throw two with your bonus. I basically took the monk's
flurry of blows and fucking darts.
Darts.
That's funny.
But
I like that. No. I also like how you gave it point blank. The whole, like, you know, make it a ranged attack against a target within 5 feet of you doesn't impose disadvantage.
Yes.
I think that's so necessary. It's a dart. Come on. Like, it's not like I'm pointing like a whole, yeah, like, I understand a bow and arrow, but like, I could just do one of these to somebody. Like,
the flip off.
Yeah, like, come on.
Overall, I had a lot of fun making this, and I want to thank everyone on Reddit who helped, all of our patrons that gave me feedback. Huge shout out to Richard Handren, Steve Honadel, all of our patrons, and my wife. My wife did the editing, so if you find a typo, it's her fault.
Oof.
That's funny. Do you guys have any other additional thoughts on this?
Actually, one of our users in chat, Steve, he's like, I thought about making these available to my players after they've shown a choice for a particular weapon. Kind of like, hey, you're proficient, but now you've used it so much, you're now an expert.
It's funny you mention that, because when I really struggled to determine who would have access and how they would get these, and I initially considered making it a book of feats, and each one of these being a feat for the weapon. And the only reason I didn't do that, because it still came back to, is anybody going to spend a feat to use a sickle? Probably not. They're still probably going to wait. Oh, there's no feet. I don't like the feet for this weapon, so I'm not going to take it. But I was almost there. Right. Like, or at level one, they can choose a weapon that they can use the perk on. I had tossed a lot of different ideas around. So I did end up just going with anybody that's proficient can use it. But if you want to introduce it that way, dude, you go ahead. Let me know what your players think. I think yeah, it would. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I like that idea a lot too. Just being like, it kind of gives that mastery over the weapon, right? Like it makes you feel like you're like, yes, I'm practiced in this. Like, the whole, like, I think you were going to say like at level one, just choose one. And like, that's what you get to go with. And mm-hmm. I think that'd be a great idea. Like mm-hmm. I'm the master of the sickle, man. Let's go. I love that sickle. That's so cool, man. I love it.
Carmageddon says, if your prison pocket is big enough, could you hide a dart?
Oh yeah,
I would assume, but you're not gonna get any benefit like if you pinched a dagger in your pocket.
Yeah, you don't get the same perk.
So
no, I'm not gonna go there.
All right, I think that'll do it for our main topic today. The prison, I mean the weapon perks.
Oh man.
Before we move into our tips and tricks, we have another gift to give away, compliments of Jeff Stevens. Ian, would you like to tell us about it?
Encounters of the Seven Seas 2 by Jeff Stevens once again. Revolutionize your games with this collection of 16 mini adventures and NPCs, locations, creatures, and magical items to add to your nautical adventures.
Who's our winner today, Austin?
I want to go on a limb and say Wasama.
Wasama.
That's way better than W-Saw-Ma.
What happens if they don't win, Ian, if they didn't win?
Well, they can just go straight to CriticAcademy.com/Jeff Stevens to get Encounters on the Seven Seas 3 for free.
Do it now. Go.
It's free
right now.
Just it's not hard. You just click and go.
Yep. For shizzle. Oh, I cannot wait to talk about our next week's character concept. He's green, white, and black, and it was great.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Austin, would you like to tell us about our character concept from Nathan Hurd?
Sure. So today's character concept is the Vigilante Crime Fighter. I guess similar like Batman. I think it's Justin. Oh, no, it was Nathan that got this. Got the idea while listening to Gabe's actual play. A lawful good vampire that prowls the streets by night, only feeding on hardened criminals like murderers, high-profile thieves, drug dealers, and crime lords. It could be difficult for the players to deal with because it's a vampire. But it's a good person at heart, but the players might at some point do something illegal, getting on their vampire's bad side. The seedy underworld fears the Batman, and the law-abiding citizens herald the Dark Knight as the hero they deserve, but not the one they need. I figured it was going to kind of grow into it, but I didn't want to say it immediately because I figured it might have been at the end, and it was. I like the idea, honestly. I could imagine the vampire getting like maybe an addiction to cocaine or something because they were like drinking a drug dealer while he was still strung on cocaine, and he's just like, crap.
Did you see the one where Batman was the Batman? It was like the Path of the Gods or something like that.
Mm-mm. You mean Man-Bat?
Yeah, whatever it was, but what was the name of the flick that was?
Oh, that's the one you're talking about.
Darkness, Dark of the
Path Among Us.
No, God's Among Us, yes. And he's actually a man bat, and he's addicted to blood, like he needs to drink it. So he...
No, that's doesn't the Justice game. Crap.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. There's a show I watched where he actually had... What is it?
Gods and Monsters.
Gods and Monsters. And Batman actually is a vampire, and he's like taking out the bad guys. He's draining their blood at the same time. Like, that's, it's whack. Hilarious. I think this would be a really cool concept, to be honest. I definitely like the feel of it. And could you imagine? And you could easily reflavor the folk hero background for this too.
Yep.
Yeah. Like,
I actually pictured briefly, like in the show, What We Do in the Shadows, when they decide to like stalk some like a club goers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I just had that club goer's blood. He was high on so much LSD.
What the hell? Oh my god.
Vampire's tripping out.
What I think is cool about this, because as a DM, this could make for an interesting hook, right? Because you could easily have a good guy hunting down this person who's doing this vigilante work that's technically not a law-abiding a citizen, right?
Right, yeah.
He's doing all these sketchy things, like let's say he knows Ian is guilty of slave trafficking, and it's illegal in this part of the world or whatever. But he can't find any evidence, so he plants and creates his own evidence to prove that he's guilty. So he's doing the right thing, but using the wrong method to do it. And there's a good lawful paladin chasing him down, because while he understands what he's doing is for the good, maybe he doesn't even know that. He just knows that this is fake and not accurate, and this guy planted it here. I think that would just be an awesome adventure and an ongoing theme.
So, be cool. I like it.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Nathan Hurd. That'll do for our character concept, the Vigilante Crime Fighter. Ian, would you like to tell us about our monster variant?
Our monster variant today comes from the Thoros, once again, the Satassin Skirmisher. And the flavor text on the original Magic the Gathering card was Basara, the Tower of the Fox, houses the elite skirmishers who guard the Nessian wood against trespassers.
I like that.
I like that too.
All right. And furthermore, these warrior women are elite sentinels protecting their lands from outsiders, utilizing swift hit-and-run tactics, then fading back into the woods. Worshippers of the goddess Karametra, whose symbol is a scythe, representing both the harvest and the cycle of life and death, they dispense the latter to those that cross them without hesitation.
Okay. Fancy. Can I just say, you are great at writing that shit. it is really good. One way. Can you give us a little more detail about how we can create this monster and what it does?
Well, first off, you start off with the Yonti Pureblood. And the modification we make is we take its immunities, throw them away.
We don't need them.
The new feature they gain mobile. When a skirmisher makes a melee attack against a creature, it does not provoke opportunity attacks from that creature for the rest of the turn.
Uh-oh.
Whether it hit or not.
Ooh, like that.
And on top of all that, we now give them a spell list. The at-wills they gain are Booming Blade and Firebolt. And 3 times per day each, they can use Magic Missile, Shield, and Suggestion.
Shit. You're boned. So it attacks, regardless of hits or miss, it can run away. If it does attack and it does hit, you're struck with Booming Blade, which means if you do try to chase it, boom, it can pelt you away automatically with Magic Missile. I can imagine as players, that would piss you off, right? Just pelting you over and over with a magic attack that you can't 100%. Dodge. And then, of course, hitting it is hard. Not only is it running away, but it's got shield too.
Mm-hmm.
And what does it do about the pesky adventure for some reason it can't manipulate? It just asks it to sit down. Go stand in a corner for 10 minutes. Oh man, what do you guys think about this?
This definitely sounds like a skirmisher. It's constantly going in and out. It's trying to do its best to basically just not get hit. Like its whole game plan is like, all right, I'm just not going to get hit, and I'm just going to pelt away at these guys until eventually they die. And it's cool. I like it.
It's a lot of fun.
Feels that way. Well, it's a lot of fun for the DM. I don't know about the players, but...
Yeah, since I'm generally the DM, it's a lot of fun for me. Yeah. Definitely check it out. Carmageddon says, this is why we don't let rogues learn much magic.
He's right.
Honestly, that's one of the benefits of picking an arcane trickster is you do get access to this combination, which is pretty dope. So
you could just combine it with the mobile feat and you're just everywhere doing whatever you want. Doesn't matter.
Monks too. Yeah, it's pretty savage. Yeah. I like very highly mobile enemies. So
they're tough to deal with.
Nader's like, it sounds like my wife. Annoying. somebody hasn't been laid in a while. All right, that'll do it for our monster variant. the Cetacean Skirmisher from Theros. The card art is awesome. You should Google that shit. It looks dope as hell. If you don't know, I've been taking a bunch of the cards and converting them into monsters and items and stuff, leading up to the release of the new
Theros book.
So, which, by the way, I guess I can go ahead and announce it since I did it in chat. We will be giving away a free copy of that book, thanks to New York Tater. So we'll give you all the details and stuff on that as it gets closer to that time. So keep an eye out of that. Yeah, you get a whole new, fresh physical copy. So our encounter of the podcast is Fear of the Night. Now, I'm going to be honest. I pulled this text directly from a 4E Dungeon Delve book because it's awesome. A nest of vampires has claimed a dark forest and the surrounding human towns as its domain. Some of the local residents revere the vampires and serve as daylight guardians and spies. However, most of the town folk live in a state of dread. Those town folk have finally scavenged enough valuables to hire a band of adventurers to destroy the nest. The villagers do not know that a powerful necromancer named Borid Crowfinger, a.k.a. the Bone Master, has recently usurped the control of the nest. So, I like this, because not only does it follow some of the traditional vampire spiel, but I think it fits really, really well with that the locals being in on it and doing what they can to thwart the adventurers, some of them redirecting them to the wrong direction or giving them false information. And that to me just seems like a great opportunity to constantly lie to the players from an NPC standpoint and watch them twist and you know, squirm because everything that they've been told is inaccurate because daylight guardians are doing everything they can to protect them while the other half of the town is trying to get rid of them, right? So the players now don't know who to believe. And on top of that, the person that's actually running it is not a vampire, but is in fact a powerful necromancer, which means you'll probably run into several undead that aren't vampires, which means they won't die in the same manner, right? What do you think, Ian?
Definitely a lot of RP potential to go off this without question, and the combat variety can be interesting too, because necromancers, that gives some options, vampires, that gives options, regular plain old villagers, some probably more than others, that gives options.
And see, I love that, because it doesn't necessarily mean that they're evil, right?
No.
It just means they worship these vampires for some reason. Maybe the vampires have a deal with them. They hunt them for game and stuff while they let them drink their blood and you know, they feed each other, right? Yep. And that's why I like this so much and it jumped out so much is there's so much as a DM you can do with this as far as what direction to take it. You mentioned the townsfolk. If they're not evil, killing them is wrong, right? And there might be a set of bad good guys that come chasing you now because you killed some villagers. Sure, they were worshiping these vampires, but they weren't necessarily bad. They're just like, hey, we give them food, they give us food. It's a mutual agreement that half the group doesn't agree with. So, what do you think, Austin?
I mean, I just got back, but from the sounds of it, it does kind of what more towards what Ian said. It does sound like interesting that there is like those options available to the DM to kind of like work off of. So I can definitely see where there's almost like morally gray area where it's like, do we kill these villagers? I mean, they're just villagers at the end of the day. They're not really doing anything.
Yeah. It's not like they're a cult or anything that are actively trying to bring the destruction of a village or
exactly
or something. So yeah, I love the morally gray areas. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, that'll do it for our encounter. Austin, would you like to tell us about our magic item?
Absolutely. This magic item is called God's Willing. Again, it's more for the Theros cards. The flavor text is, honor the gods of Theros, and they will return the favor. It is a potion, which, as we all know, our DM here loves his consumables. It is a rare item. This vial contains a golden liquid that swirls of sparkling silver within it. When imbibed, the potion tastes a little like a sweet, warm nectar. A sensation of warm fire fills the drinker as vitality and renewed vigor flood every fiber of their being. It lasts only a moment, but afterwards, the drinker is left feeling very restored. When you drink this potion, you gain resistance to non-magical piercing, slashing, and bludgeoning damage and two types of magical damage for 1 hour. A lot for 1 hour. The DM chooses the type and determines it randomly from the options below. And it's just...
it's all the magic roll a D10 and
yeah. So, that's cool.
What do you guys think about that?
Useful.
I would say this would be too strong, but honestly it's not, because it's a consumable and it's only a rare item.
Yep, and it's gone.
So you use it once and it's good. Use it right before your buff fight.
It's like a buffed rage.
Yeah,
rage on steroids.
It's rage, but I can still use magic.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so I really like doing this. I like taking the cards from Theros and looking at them and trying to figure out how to make them into like a monster or an item. Almost wanted to do spells, but I was like, there's enough spells.
Oh yeah.
Plenty
of spells.
And Beyond the Watch, you might find this in our game, because I was never mind. You might find this in our game. What do you think, Ian?
Lots of consumable options can lead to lots of fun stuff. And my own concern would be if you happen to roll the same number twice, but I could imagine most of this would just roll again.
Yeah. I guess you're right. Maybe that probably should be in there, because some DMs be like, oh, looks like you only get one, asshole.
Right. And since this is a very consumable, which is probably not cheap or hard to come by in the first place, let your period get your mileage of it.
Right, right. Carmageddon says you can go crazy with consumables. My man or girl, you are right.
It's true. Yeah, you can kind of just keep on using them. you can, because you never know when you're going to get another from your DM. Right. So, makes sense.
All right. Moving on to our Dungeon Master tip. Now, this is something... I don't have anything written down for this. I just have a big picture, and I want to talk about this because for our Dungeon Master tip today, we have ship damage and monster chase trackers. So when we went to the, what was the name of that convention we went to?
Ian? Which one?
The most recent one. ArcadaCon. ArcadaCon? ArcadaCon.
ArcadaCon, yeah.
When we went to ArcadaCon, Brandon ArcadaCon. Raid... ran an adventure called The Ballad of the Dark Maiden. You can find a link to that adventure in our show notes. But it had one of the coolest tools for helping deal with this scene. So let me set the scene up. Your ship is being chased by a giant water-walking spider. Giant, ship size, right? This ginormous thing.
Okay.
And so it has these two images. One is the ship. It's basically a long bar that represents your ship, and it's a damage meter, right? It's like a progression damage meter. And then it also has a similar one that's got a spider on it, and it's the distance, and it's got, you know, regular metrics and intervals to show how far or how close this thing is, and the monster travels so far, and the ship can go so far, but as the monster takes damage or the ship takes damage, those velocities change, which means it's difficult to kind of, at least from a theater of the mind or even on a grid, kind of monitor that. So they have these little printouts that you basically treat as one of those, like those goal thermometers. You remember those when you're trying to raise money and you get the little thermometer and it goes up and it only goes up, it doesn't go down. But basically you can slide the token back and forth on these two things to represent the progress. So the more ship damage it takes, it lowers the ship speed. Right. And then, you know, the distance can increase, is easier to catch up. And it was just such a well thought out idea for tracking this ship trying to run away from a giant water walking spider. And it just blew me away as a way to track a chase scene like that outside of the traditional, like I use skill challenges. What do you guys think about this? I know, I don't think either you guys weren't there part of this game, but
I was not, no,
was not, no, but I mean, I can definitely see the usage of this. Like, I mean, sometimes stuff like that is hard to track. I mean, I only DM'd once, and it was kind of a while ago, and it was like pretty early on. But I mean, regardless, like DMs have to keep track of a lot. They don't tell you, because if they did, it would take up the whole session.
Well, and having this out for the players to visually see probably helps too, because one thing that I learned is when you saw the damn thing getting closer, it wasn't just the DM saying, "Oh, it's on you, it's gonna get you." You can literally see it's gonna fucking get you.
Yeah.
So what can we do to get away? Throw a net. That's not gonna help. We did end up coming up with a really clever idea of throwing an anchor, to try to use it to like snag and go fishing for the spider and drag the spider along instead of like trying to escape it and trying to like reel it in. It wasn't a great idea.
Yeah, okay.
We're like, well, we'll get it caught up in our anchor and stuff, and it'll slow it down. But in fact, we just reeled it in and almost caused us to die. So,
yeah, well, you know.
But I thought this was a fantastic tool, and I wanted to share that. You can pick up Ballad of the Maiden, or you can check our show notes and see the design. Easy to replace the text with whatever you want, whether it's ship or a carriage or something else. So. But Carmageddon says, but nets come with perks now, so throw that net. Toss out a safety net.
There you go.
That'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, ship and monster chase tracker. Our player tip of the day is don't be a dick, and you can avoid dickitude by focus on those arcane studies. I love this spell combination: time stop plus fireball plus delayed fire blast. Or blast of fireball. Now, if you don't know, with time stop, you basically get up to 1d4 plus 1 turns to do whatever you want, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't do damage. Yes, but you can't do damage.
Yeah.
Well, that's not really a problem now, is it? If you use delayed blast fireball that you can trigger by choosing to drop concentration, thus allowing two spells to go off simultaneously, because really you can drop concentration. When can you drop concentration, Ian?
Whenever you want.
Whenever you want. So you get everything set up. You cast delayed fireball or delayed blast fireball. Oh, I got another round. Delayed blast fireball. Oh, I got another round. Delayed blast fireball. And you just turn the entire battlefield into a minefield. Then, when you're ready, with your last round, you cast Fireball, and then end the concentration. The Fireball blows up, all your delayed blasts go off, one delayed, so you can only do one delayed, I'm sorry. Concentration, I knew that. I have that here, it says it. So, you drop the delayed Fire Blast, do any buffs or anything like that, and then get ready to watch it, kaboom. Now, you can actually cast it at a higher level, and go from and increase it from 12d6. If you combine it with your regular fireball, you're looking at over 19d6 of damage in what's essentially a single round's turn for everybody else. It's bad. It's really, really bad. Yeah. What do you guys think about that?
Sorcerers would love this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, sorcerers, wizards, the enemies, all the monsters. Yes, because I totally intend to do this with my monsters. Because guess where you guys are at?
We're at Avernus.
Yeah. Oh, my God. How would you guys react to run into somebody that's just stops time? Oh.
Well, we wouldn't know. To us, it'd just be a second. But for them, it'd be like, you know,
fucking fire like coming out of nowhere. Oh,
it's like,
man. Where
It's like if Frieza did like the whole little fireball thing, and it's like, well, it was this big, and next thing I know, it's like the size of a building. What happened?
Yeah. You know, that actually made me think of a Dio from JoJo's Bizarre Adventures.
Mm-hmm. Which season's that guy in? He's not in the third one, is he?
Yeah, he is.
Okay, that's why I recognize the name.
Well, and first season too, for that matter. But
Is he the murderer guy?
What? He's a vampire.
Oh, the vampire with the mask guy. Okay, I remember that.
Yep.
All right, sorry, I didn't play 20 questions. But
I have to make time stop. And while time has stopped, I'm going to grab all these knives and throw them at you. And then I'll grab this bulldozer and then smash you with it, because why not? Oh, well, time stop.
Yeah, I thought that this was an amazing combo and is devastating to any group. Like, yeah. As a player, would you be pissed off if the monster or arcane monster did something like this?
Would you feel like it's the first time? That's for sure. By the way, I said to him, like, well, was in his arsenal, then of course he's gonna use that combination.
I mean,
if you got the big bad evil guy, you expect big bad evil guy results on this skull of ice.
Yeah, and that I was thinking about that when I was looking through what I was planning, and you know, I saw this, and I'm just like, you know, I would almost feel ripped off if I just had to suck two fireballs down and didn't even get to do anything. But I guess that's why these are dangerous. So
right.
But I mean, these are all high level spells and expected at high level play anyway. So, mm-hmm. Do you guys have any comments on this?
No, not really. It's pretty straightforward. You time stop, delay blast fireball, and you just wait. You wait gloriously as you're about to witness a gigantic explosion.
Well, you know, the other thing I think is cool about time stop is while you're in it, you can use all those rounds to buff yourself. Cast, you know, spells like haste or something, yeah. Or something without concentration, I would imagine. But yeah. That is our player tip of the podcast. Don't be a dick. And you can avoid dickitude by stopping time and blowing shit up.
Stop and burn, baby.
Carmageddon says, as you should always let your players know, I can do whatever you can do, so bring the shenanigans. I love it. All right. Wow. I think that'll do it for our show today.
Yeah.
Inversely, the players can do what you do if they think about it hard enough.
Right. Mm-hmm. Please join us on our next episode. We'll be discussing allies, enemies, and quests. Special guest, our personal friend, Jeff Stevens, will be joining us again to talk about his latest product, which is awesome, by the way.
If you have any feedback, unearth tips and tricks, or topics you would like us to discuss, please send them to us. You can email them to us at critacademy@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook at critacademy.
We hope you enjoyed your experience here at Crit Academy. If you did, you can help others find the show by leaving a, hopefully, 5-star review on iTunes or your platform of choice, or just send a message telling us how much you enjoy the show. And also, be sure to give us a like and a share.
Yeah, make sure to subscribe to our show at CritAcademy.com, follow us on twitch.tv/CritAcademy, and subscribe to us on YouTube so we can help you on your future adventures, as well as be entered to win cool prizes each and every single week. Make sure to check out our fellowship members there as well. Jeff is a huge fellowship member. Make sure you head on and support him, pick up some of his cool stuff. Follow him on Twitter and Facebook and all that jazz. Check out Gabe and Jeff, Interparty Conflict. They release amazing content. They actually just did an episode about time and altering it and running it in your campaign, which is pretty cool. And once again, if you haven't heard, there is 6 episodes of an actual play that I participated in, and it was glorious. I had so much fun. So definitely check them out. If you like actual play, also check out Brute Force and Ignorance. Those guys do pretty good stuff. I got to double check. I haven't listened to them in a couple of weeks. I don't know if they're still on a hiatus or not, but you know, with coronavirus and all that jazz. So,
yeah,
I think that'll do it for our show today. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.